Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Doug hates candy wrappers, screaming baby sticky seeds with 50 as in popcorn kernels in his teeth. There's still not one that he won't see, 'cause Doug loves movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Doug Loves Movies. It's we taped these a little bit in advance, so it's 2007, everybody. Woo-hoo! Happy New Year. And I'm back with more loving of more movies here at the UCB Theater in Los Angeles. Not live, but in front of a live audience. Thanks for coming out, you guys. Oh, this is a hot one. We might have hit a record number of attending peoples. Sorry to get all into show business jargon in front of you guys. Peoples is what we call audience members. O.J. Simpson. How does this fit into movies? Well, he was in several of them. The Naked Gun films. Yeah, Saved a Cat in Towering Inferno. Anyway, movie star O.J. Simpson, also a murderer, has written a book called If I Did It, How I Would Have Done It. And apparently none of us are going to see this book. It's not actually going to be published. But I at least hope that the way he would have done it if he did it would be to do it in a way that would leave more suspects than just himself. He's had some time to think about it and improve the plan. Throw in, like, get a housekeeper in there or something. All right, my guest today co-created and starred in Mr. Show. Yeah, that's right. The credits are getting applause. He played Tobias Funke on Arrested Development. And he's currently one of the minds behind Freak Show on Comedy Central. Please welcome the beautiful brain of David Cross, everybody. Now is when you clap. There he is. Yay.
Let's do this.
Hello, David.
I'm good, thank you.
Are you going to be answering one question ahead the entire interview?
I guess 14 or 15, I don't remember.
When was the first star-rated movie that you saw?
That's cheating. You're making a Mobius time strip.
That would really help me out if you would give me the answers first.
I do remember
and
the
I'll
first
figure
movie,
out what the question is.
Star-rated movie I saw.
What was that?
It was Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry. Or
could go
crazy,
either way.
Crazy, yeah, Dirty Mary
Dirty.
And Crazy Larry, right?
Yeah.
With Dirty Peter Mary, Fonda crazy and Susan Larry. George. And yeah. That's when I learned what a dingleberry was. And there was...
I still want to know.
You don't know what a dingleberry is?
Yeah, I know what it is.
Oh, for those people out in the audience who don't
know. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they explain it in the movie, because one of the characters doesn't know. The character who represents me, the average Joe audience member, 14-year-old kid in Roswell, Georgia, who's, you know, am I boring you?
No, I'm... I got obsessed with looking up...
Is this why you have an audience, so you can ask a question, then take a nap, or leaf through
No, they're
stuff.
Listening. The audience is totally listening. I'm just... I'm just trying to find Dirty Larry, Crazy Mary.
Oh, it was... I can't remember who directed it, but Peter Fonda's in it, and Susan George, if they have, like, an actor thing. And it was, obviously, the 70s.
I think it starts crazy.
Crazy?
See, I looked up Dirty first. I should have looked up Crazy.
No, it's a different movie with
Crazy Harry?
A similar word. It shares the same word in the title as this movie, but it was Crazy
Mary.
Crazy Mary
and Dirty Larry.
Anyway, but they...
Well, of course the woman's going to be crazy.
No, she's dirty.
Who wants to watch it dirty?
She's dirty. The guy's crazy, I think. She's dirty because she likes to have sex, which makes you dirty if you're a woman. If you're a man, it makes you virile and normal. And if you're a woman, it makes you whorish and demonic and mentally unstable.
I found Crazy Mama.
Nope.
And Crazy Moon and Crazy People and the Crazy Quilt.
Nope.
But no Crazy Someone, Dirty Someone Else.
Or look on. Or you looked under Dirty, right? I guarantee you, it's crazy or dirty, and we'll find it at some point. And
Crazy Beautiful.
Dirty.
Crazy Jack and the Boy.
Do you guys
that
know what
sounds crazy?
Dirty Mary, Crazy Larry. Yeah.
Dirty Mary,
See,
Crazy
it is
Larry.
Dirty first.
Well, then you said you looked at Dirty.
I looked at it, but you were talking.
Sorry.
So it's hard for me to concentrate.
But that was my first R-rated movie, and she gets
Do you remember
topless.
Liking it?
I liked, I was still really fascinated with movies. This is before I saw the second Matrix. And had a, you know, innocent childlike joy of just the idea of movies. And I liked it, you know, because at that point, I mean, I hadn't seen every single type of movie that was going to come out ever, you know, until I was like in my late 20s. And now they just recycle the same stuff. So going to the movie has a lot less joy. Like, if I saw Casino Royale a couple days ago, you know, and not reluctantly, but kind of like, you know, bored. I guess that's supposed to be okay. And if I had never seen a movie like that before, I would have been the greatest movie ever. But
right.
it's you're looking at it in relative terms to other movies and going, yeah, it's all right. You know, that's how I enjoy movies, unless they're really, you know, original or something.
Well, and the length thing is getting out of hand. It's easily 20 minutes too long.
The which one?
The new Casino Royale.
Would you say, though, the length?
The length.
Oh, the length, yeah.
Running time is too long.
Well, I mean, it's not too long if you have a decent movie. I just hate these.
That movie was too long. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, the poker match.
The
poker
best
match.
Thing. That
the
was
big
the best
poker
thing.
Match. He only wins because he's lucky.
No, but
when you get a straight flush, that's luck, or you're cheating.
Yes.
Like,
but it's written. And I saw that Paul Haggis had like a credit.
Yeah.
Like he probably punched it up, and and he probably was the genius behind. Well, James Bond always plays Baccarat, but you know what the kids are into today is Texas Hold'em.
Right.
So all of a sudden, for the first time in Bond history, even though it's the first Bond film, the first Bond story,
right.
And he's at a casino in Europe where, you know, these, you know, crazy multi-millionaires from all around the world gather to play Baccarat? No, Texas Hold'em. They saw it on fucking Bravo. So,
yeehaw!
Yeah, the Japanese guy who has one line who people laughed at when I went and saw it. They laughed in the theater I was in when he went, all in, 150 million, or whatever he said.
All in. Yeah.
But the best thing is that...
Aya! When he didn't hit it.
Yeah. He puts it in, and then they have one of the greatest actors in the last 40 years at least, Giancarlo Giannini, is in that movie solely to as exposition to tell you, explain what Texas Hold'em is and how the rules are. And that's what he does. He leans over to the woman while they're playing this 20-minute long game. I don't know if you've seen the movie. It's so mind-numbingly boring scene.
Where, spoiler alert.
Again, like, it's all luck, and then the guy, his tell is the most obvious, like a retarded his child tell. Who just woke up out of a coma would go, huh, that's his tell, you know. Yeah. And he goes like this. He gets nervous, and he itches over here, and then Bond goes, like, sees it, and he goes, that's his tell. I found his tell. Like, he's some genius who... and then Giancarlo, would say, okay, now he just put in... He went all in. That means all the money's in. $150 million in the pot. Whoever wins this wins the whole thing. You know, and you have to watch.
Yeah, the only difference was their hands didn't come up on the screen. You couldn't see what their hands were until the reveal at the end. But I was, as soon as that guy had a boat, the other guy, the bleeding eye guy, I was like, James Bond's got a fucking straight flush.
Of course. You look at the cards,
look at the board, and you can tell that's going to win. You're like, he's got a five and a six.
And I was being a dick because I was leaning over to my girlfriend, acting like I'm the, you know, like, I'll show her how smart I am. And I was doing that. Like, not, but she doesn't know Texas Hold'em, so I ruined it for her by going, you know, like, he's got a straight flush. Bond's got a straight flush. I mean, that's still clearly the only thing.
She should have been so impressed by that. She should have been like, holy shit, you know your poker.
Wow, you got a hold of this script before. It,
You sat through the whole movie just to impress me when we watched it together.
And I like, remember when the dealer at one point goes, he's called him, and now it's Bond's last chance to respond and or to act. And he goes, "Mr. Bond, it's up to you." When the correct phrase is, "It's to you. The bet's to you." Yeah. He goes, "The bet's up to you." No, the bet isn't up to you. Somebody on the set, nobody on the set said that's not the correct phrase. All right, forget it. Enough of that movie. We've already given it.
Dirty Mary and Crazy Larry.
Did you see it?
It's right here in print.
There you go. What'd it say?
93 minutes of...
good running time. That's a good running time.
Oh, marred only by a downbeat finale.
Oh, no. That's the best part about it, is it doesn't have a stupid Hollywood... They get killed at the end. That's what he means by downbeat.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that it's realistic.
Oh, I thought by downbeat they just didn't get to the town they were trying to get to or something. You know,
no, he farted.
They broke up.
No, it's crazy. They try to outrun this train, and it's like Zabriskie Point or whatever. They try to outrun they're running against from the cops. And anyway, Dingleberry. They use that phrase, and I remember it. And I was with my friend who was like this really tough kid who was like, you know... he ended up going to jail, and one of those kids, you know, hanging out in Georgia smoking when he was like 11, and, you know, he'd build ramps and...
Jackie Earl Haley in Bad News Bears.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, yeah. Without the... I don't know if it's...
do you think he grew up to be like a weirdo? Like, have you seen Little Children?
I did. I was disappointed.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't think...
Didn't live up to the hype.
No, I tried to go. I try to go see those type of movies before I know anything about them. Like, I just want to know as little as possible and sort of get a feel. Like, oh, people like it. Oh, it's Todd Field. Oh, it's these guys. Let's give it a shot. So I don't know anything about it, but I didn't care. I liked it. I liked it less the further away from it I got. I didn't like it towards the last 20 minutes. I really started not liking it. But then the more I thought about it, the more I didn't like it, as opposed to other movies where you walk away and you weren't that into it, and then as you're thinking about it, you're going, you know what, that was pretty cool, that was good, you know.
Would like it Mary be Poppins. Better? Would it be better or worse without the, scientific narration? The sounds like a, you know, an instructional film of some kind.
I thought that was one of the few interesting things about it that I. You mean the act of just the presence of VO, or the way that they chose
the way the
to,
VO is just some,
I like the way
some
they
dude
did.
That sounds like he's giving a lecture or talking
it's the
about
guy who does,
a
state for the
National Geographic kind of thing.
Well, he does that guy does Frontline, I think. He does Frontline or Nova or one of those.
Right. Yeah, it's very
Nova-esque.
Shows, yeah, you know?
And I like that. I thought that was interesting. And
I think that's what kind of put it over the top and made people like it as much as they do. You know,
I just don't like VO. I don't think VO is necessary usually, and it's overused and
like on Oliver Bean.
Yeah.
Maybe one example.
Yeah.
Where well, I believe yes. you were the voiceover.
Well, that was a
That's just an example. It no, doesn't mean you didn't think it was good.
No, I didn't think it was good, and also it was a TV show. Let's move on.
Let's not talk about TV. We came here to talk about.
But that whole thing was a ripoff of Wonder Years, which was a ripoff of Gene Shepard. You know.
Right. Adam Rourke was in Dirty Mary Crazy Larry.
He was?
Mm-hmm.
What did he do?
I don't know. It just says his name. And Vic Morrow.
Wait, who's Adam Rourke?
I don't know.
For some reason, I was like, really? Adam Rourke?
Yeah, I looked down at it and was like, Adam Rourke?
I don't know who Adam Rourke is.
I don't know who he is either. No. But I just got it. For some reason, I looked at it and got excited about it because I already knew about Peter Fonda and Susan George.
Yeah, your exuberance like completely. I sucked it up.
And I think my first nudity was the woman painted gold in Goldfinger. I think was the first time I saw like a naked woman.
Well, see, that was a naked. These were like nipples and all that stuff, and a little patch of fuzz, like right, like she kind of undoes her pants.
No, it's hilarious. There's some like PG. I saw that movie Lifeguard with Sam Elliott. That from the 70s. And
you were friends with Sam Elliott?
Yeah, hey, we went
so
together.
He's so much older than you.
Yeah, well.
Oh, it was like a big brother thing? Out, yeah. He took you to movies? All right. Cool.
Speaking of narration, his narration in Raising Arizona is awesome.
Yes.
Or not, I mean, Big Lebowski. Big Lebowski. I don't know what the fuck I was talking
about.
But
he also, you see the narrator, so that's a mitigating factor, I think, for narration.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But it's fun narration. It's interesting, you know.
Yes.
It's got a character, and that's sort of how it is in Little Children.
Have you seen The Narrators? It's a 90-minute movie. It's like a kind of a round table thing.
I'm going to wait for when it comes out on DVD and I can listen to the commentary. I like to sometimes listen to the commentary the first time through.
Sure, take the picture off and just listen to the commentary.
Yeah.
And
because they'll fucking tell you what's going on. That's all they do is sit and talk about it. Like it might as well just be somebody that has seen the movie, well, sitting there talking about it. Oh, I remember that day. It was hot out. You know, it's a sunny scene. And
yeah, I have a porno on DVD. I think it's Talk Dirty to Me Part Something, and I got it. And I was at a DVD store, and then I saw it. And I did like a double take, and I've never seen this before or since. On a porno tape, which is a director's commentary track. And I was like, oh, shit. So I got it, and it's so great. It's so funny because there's long, long pauses. I mean, it's a porn director who acted in it, and it's just like a shitty porn. You know, it's not even one of those big budget things. It's just your random whatever. And so he's talking about himself, and the guy doesn't have much of a personality. I mean, he can't be the brightest guy in the world, and now he's, like, sitting, you know, and he clearly doesn't know what to say, and it's all stuff like he literally talks about his shirt and where he got his shirt, and he got his shirt because it was chilly. I'm not joking. It's like the first time you see him, he's like, he steps like he's just gotten out of prison, but he's just walking down, like, train tracks, which if you can't shoot by a prison, you might as well throw him in train tracks, as all prisons are right by train tracks, and the train tracks directly lead to your old home, and he's just walking, and he's sort of like, yeah, and there's like 3-minute pauses in between things, and he's like, yeah, I got a flannel shirt on there, I wasn't going to wear that. I had somebody go out because it was chilly that day. And then we had to use it for the other scenes. And then he's like, there's Missy. She's a great girl, great piece of ass. It's great.
That sounds awesome. I thought of the story of when Chevy Chase used to be funny. And I think he may have crossed over in this during the course of this story. The movie he was watching is his least, like when he started being really not funny. At the premiere of Spies Like Us, mm-hmm. the first, you know, 5 minutes into it, they're in the desert or whatever. And Chevy Chase from his seat just yells out, "Sure was hot that day, wasn't it, Danny?" you know, and Dan Aykroyd's on like the other side of the theater and like yelled some sort of response, and that got the biggest laugh. Like the movie got no laughter from the Hollywood crowd of friends of theirs, but that one moment was like.
And that's where the
moment.
Idea to have DVD commentary, should DVDs ever be invented,
yes,
came about.
So, are you going to see the shit out of Dreamgirls? I know you love that kind of thing.
I mean, black people make me uncomfortable, and just the idea of black people from a generation I can't even begin to, I don't know, understand half their language. I mean, it's, I don't know. I honestly don't see that many movies, because they are 8 times out of 10 disappointing. And that looks like a movie that I'm not going to be that into. I'm not into musicals that much. Although I assume the music would be better because it's kind of genre specific.
But you obviously happen to catch enough of musicals to be good at doing, you know, musical parody. That shit, when you do that stuff, it's so hilarious.
Yeah, but that's just imitating something that...
you caught a glimpse of or something.
Well, no, I did musical theater in high school for a couple years, and I did a couple shows. I did West Side Story, Grease, and Pippin. Which is always a great reference. And if I ever reference Pippin, people think I'm joking, and it's some sort of brilliant esoteric, like, wow, good pull. But I was like, oh, I was.
But that
I never
was the
tell
third
him,
show
like,
that you were in.
Yeah, so I was in. I played King Charlemagne. Thank you. Think about the sun, Pippin. But I always had a kind of love-hate relationship with that whole world, because when I went to a school of the arts, which not being hyperbolic, kind of saved my life. I don't know if I would have continued. I either would have killed myself or just run away from home or something. It was a miserable existence in Roswell, Georgia, and then we moved into the city, and I went to this school, and we moved in so I could go to the school, and it just was a completely different group of people.
Right, you're at the school where most of the alien kids were from Roswell.
Yeah.
And you were able to interact with them.
Yeah, that's great. That's good stuff.
No, but I know what you're talking about. You're suddenly like, in a world where, like, you not only fit in, you're, like, the best at it. Like, it's, you know, you're...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I was the best at it, but it was, especially in the drama department. But I didn't get to the drama department until 11th grade. In the first year, I was in musical theater, and I kind of liked it because I was just able to do stuff, and there was no PE, there's no, like, I didn't have to do gym or any of that stuff. And but on the same hand... And I share this feeling today. I loathe those kind of drama queen, you know, like that kind of fey musical theater world, and those girls who are like, you know, I'm totally hooked on aspirin, you know, just like make a, you know, whatever. And then the guy, and I can't stand them, and I couldn't stand them then, but I was happy to be in that world. So there was like a little mix there, but I did a bunch of shows because I was you know, so happy to be out of that, the world I come from. So yeah, I ended up, I know that world, but I can easily parody it.
But in its weird way, it was also like it just got you used to the idea of being on stage and performing, and like, you know, all that stuff pushed you towards, you know, what
Definitely,
you do
yeah.
now.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. All right. Next question. Of all the movies that you've done, like, do you have one that's like a favorite or that you're most proud of? I mean, I know you've played a lot of parts and stuff that you don't necessarily have any control over.
Yeah, I think most things weren't that good, but I think there were. I mean, you mean like that movie,
like,
or
throw
me?
A hard one at you?
There's nothing.
Either one, like, yeah, either your performance or the movie, you know.
Well,
like,
I'm
I mean, a lot of people be fucking so amped to be like in the scene you're in Men in Black.
Oh,
like,
that was
people fucking love that. You know what I mean? Like, so that's like cool that you did that, but I know that you're like, you don't really, you know, care.
No, I don't care. Well, I don't care about that kind of stuff. I mean, I was really flattered and excited to do something with Michelle Gondry, so that was great. I had that a couple brief scenes,
In the Spotless Mind.
Eternal Sunshine, and a Charlie Kaufman script, and that was just fun, and you know, I was more of like, that was easy to do, but it was more of just like sort of, you know, it was very flattering, and you know, I felt.
Yeah, it ended up being a cool movie. You're like, yeah. You have a well, cool part in a be. Cool movie.
Yes, and there's that, and then there was like Waiting for Guffman, and then there's.
Yeah, do you ever like rub it in Bob's face that his that he doesn't have any dialogue, and you do? He's just standing there in a cape in a hallway, and well, you actually get to talk.
Well, they. I mean, I
know how those movies are made in that weird way where they like.
Yeah, especially that kind of thing where they're improvising a lot of stuff, and you're just going to find, oh, this story is extraneous, and you know, I'm positive it had nothing to do with performance, or it was just a matter of like we don't have time to do this thing. I'm sure he loved what he did, yeah, like stuff like that, and then you know, there's a couple things here and there. Like,
what about? I've never seen. I saw on IMDb you did a short film with Gondry.
Yeah.
Called The Turd.
No,
or you play the turd.
I play his poo.
It's called One Day or something.
It's called
like that.
One Day, and
and you play the turd.
I play the turd, and you know, Michelle and I get along quite well. He, I think, was trying to date my girlfriend when we were broken up, and that's all right. It's fine. But he. He's also...
she's pretty awesome, so...
She's good.
You got to give him credit for having good taste.
He... Yeah, he called me up about... He had this idea, and I only understood every third word. And then you can only... There's a sense you get where I can only ask him to repeat something like twice before I just move on and go, all right, I'll try to... He's a plane. What? It's a plane?
No, it's a plane.
It's a plate? Is it, you know, I don't know. But, and so then I get the script, which is, I mean, it was nonsensical. It was like half, it wasn't even like typed in a format. It wasn't like final draft. It was just this thing that it was printed out. And I went to go get
like something
fitted.
Written by Crispin Glover or something.
It was, I mean, when you said, if you said, oh, this person's first language is in English, you go, oh. Okay, now I get it. And then we talked about it. And I sort of got an idea of what he wanted, but I was in this huge, nasty, hard plastic poo thing. And it was literally, no joke, literally the hottest day of the year that year in New York, which is, hot, you know, it's like twice as bad as other places because it just sits in you. You know, you're just, there's no air. It's fucking nasty, and then I had to have chocolate all over me, so I have like chocolate pudding and stuff. And then we went to this restaurant. Everything's like kind of stolen and shot super quickly, and we're walking down like in Soho and the Village and stuff. And he wants me to say to get like racist things. And we're at this Italian restaurant, and like right on. Like West 3rd or something, like right open where a bunch of tourists are. And, you know, that's all I need is the green light for that. Like, oh, goody. You know, in my head, I'm like, I'm dressed in a giant shit costume, and I've got chocolate all over my face, and now I'm like, I get to say racist things in public, you know? And I'm protected by, sir, it's called art, you know? And so, and then we shot on his street, the very the last scene.
Should have been wearing a flag skirt. One person like that.
I
just did that for her. We have this like flag skirt joke between us.
Would I understand if I asked her?
A personal thing. No.
Oh, okay. But then at the end, I turn into Hitler. So we got this authentic Hitler outfit, and that was even better. Now I get to be on 9th Street in front of his apartment, and I'm screaming, you know, these anti-Semitic, like all kinds of crazy Nazi stuff, and he's really not comfortable with it. Like, you know, and I'm running and I'm chasing after him and I'm screaming at him until he's just like, okay, that is enough. Cut it, you know, because he's in front of his building now, and it was pretty fun.
If that happened now, someone would get out their phone and you'd be on TMZ the next day.
Ugh, I know.
As the guy who dresses up like shit.
2 years too early. Yep.
That is awesome. I liked also, I very much liked the movie Ghost World.
Oh, yeah, that was another one that was...
And I liked the name of your character in the credits. Gerald the Pushy Guy, Record Collector.
Yeah.
Like, that really narrows it down. Because don't you hate it when you're watching a movie and it'll just say, Sam, and you're like, I don't remember what the guy in that one scene's name was, but I want, you know...
Pushy.
You're trying to mash it up. But this really sells it. Like, you, oh, that guy in that scene. Like, you know exactly who they're talking about. Gerald the Pushy Guy, Record Collector.
Yeah.
That was awesome, though. That was,
pushy.
That was a good scene.
That was fun. That was another one. A lot of improv. Just go to town. Yeah. That's good.
That's awesome.
But there's a funny story.
Oh, I wish we had time.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Go ahead. We got a couple minutes. We don't need to play the Leonard Maltin game.
It was awkward, but I had met Dan Clowes through Mr. Show a couple times, and I talked to him. He had come see some shows when I was doing stand-up, and then when we were doing Hooray for America and stuff like that. And so we were friendly, and we had mutual friends. And then I got a call about going in for this. First, they wanted me to do the comic who you see on TV that the girls are watching. I was like, oh, that's great. And I was going to do this thing. And then they go, oh, wait, no, they want like a bigger part for you. And it's the roommate. You know, the guy who's, I can't remember his name. He was Steve Buscemi's roommate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, great, good, all right. So they go, they just want you to go meet with the director, Terry Zwigoff, and Dan's going to be there. Oh, great, awesome. So I get my car. I'm like, oh, this will be cool. And I drive down there. And this happened a couple times before, and it's just miscommunication. I don't know where it started from. But I get there, and I'll tell it this way because you can imagine how embarrassing and awkward it was. But I never had the part. My agent told me, like, oh, yeah, they just want you to do this thing. So in my head, I'm going down to thank them, and I'm honored, and this is going to be great, and it's going to be fun. Let's do this. And to them, I don't know what was going through their head, but they're like, yeah, who's this arrogant fucking guy? I mean, I'm there to audition, to read for it. And then it was just really, like, humiliating because what's her name? Thora Birch was there, and the casting person. And there were a lot of people, and I'm sitting there going, hey, man, how are you? Oh, good. I'm psyched to do this. This is going to be good. Dan, you know, I've been a fan for... And just saying all that, like, oh, God. And then it's, like, revealed, and it was one of those things where it just wasn't told to me. It was like, all of a sudden, I'm understanding what's happening. I'm like, oh, right. Right. No. I'm not that good. I'm just, all right, we'll read. And then, so I was already, like, kind of pissed off and felt...
Tom something, the roommate.
Yeah, Tom, the non-pushy roommate, I think is his name. And compliant and amiable. And so then I'm reading, and I'm already in a kind of a weird mood, and it's really embarrassing. There's no break in the shame. There's no, like, it just went from there to stepping in this room to read. So there was no, like, can I go to the bathroom and think about things, you know? So I went in, and then he asked me to read, like, this roommate, and then the director keeps stopping me and saying, well, this guy's based on this guy I know, an old roommate I had in San Francisco, and he's more like this and this and this. So, oh, okay. So I read it more like that. And then he stops me like a good two or three times and I rarely get like this, where I was like, hey, man, I don't know your roommate. Nobody knows your roommate. Why don't you just get your roommate and cast him? Because I mean, I'm an actor and I'm trying to put a spin on this the way I saw it on the page. But I mean, otherwise, just go record him saying these lines and I'll try to imitate him. But why did you bring me down here? You know, it was really like... weird. Like, I don't know. He keeps saying, like, well, that's not how my roommate talks. Like, I don't know your roommate. Neither does anybody who's going to see this movie. What the? God.
And then you got the part.
No, I got the part of the pushy record guy.
Oh, I see.
But still, that they put you in the movie at all, though, it's like, it's...
That was a, you know, a tit. That was a cracker. That was like, all right, I'm sorry you felt bad, you know.
Wow.
No, it was a strange afternoon that... and I also remember going to...
You just weren't fat. Like, he wanted somebody fat, maybe. Or like, you
I
know.
Can eat. I know how to eat.
A portly
I
dude.
I know how to eat.
You could never do it.
I could eat you that
couldn't,
much.
You couldn't
I could
become
eat.
A fat guy for something.
I did. I did. I became a fat guy for another movie.
What
and
movie?
That never came out.
That voiceover thing you did?
It never came out. It was this movie I did, and then I had to lose all that weight for Run, Ronnie, Run. Another movie that never came out. You know, so
right.
Here I am. It's God's plan to have me on a yo-yo diet. I don't know why. In his infinite wisdom.
Oh, God. Well, we've run out of time, David. Sorry, everybody.
That's all right. You
but,
guys
you know,
have been
people that are listening to this on their computer, you know, that's enough.
Well, what if they downloaded it from their computer, put it on one of those little dealing with bobs, take
yeah.
it on the subway with you?
And they can take it on the subway or the plane or whatever. But, you know, 30 minutes is enough, don't you think? I'll have you back on again.
Audience,
next
booked.
Time you're in California, you can do it again. And for me, I have to say this. Don't forget to sign up for the Laugh Bank. I've done it 100 times. It's fun. I added the last part. I didn't have to say that. Until next time, this is Doug Benson saying, Willem Dafoe is a shithead.
Is he?
Now it's time for Doug to watch another talkie. Eyes unrolled, his viewing prowess makes him cocky. There's no room in his